This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Next on Plains FM, we have Movie Talk, a program for all things cinema-esque, for the discerning film and video junkie.
Welcome again to Movie Talk. Today we have three absolutely unusual films, all of which are highly creative in what occurs in them. Mickey 17 is a science fiction movie with many dead people brought back to life. Spit takes us back to a weird but likeable character who appeared in another Australian film just over 20 years earlier. And Black Dog takes us to a place in China filled with numerous stray dogs.
Hi, Mickey. Are you experiencing any vertigo?
I guess I am feeling a little dizzy.
Oh, wow! Did you see that?
Nah, I wouldn't be surprised if you're thinking at this point, what have I done?
How lucky can one guy be?
Nothing was working out, and I wanted to get off of Earth.
You're applying to be an expendable?
Yeah.
You read through the whole application.
Ain't that a kick in the head?
Yeah, I should have read through it.
In the science fiction movie, Mickey 17, extremely unusual things happen to a young fellow who goes on a dangerous journey to colonise a very distant planet. Charlie Sierra has been off to the Alice Cinema to see this offbeat film that deals with bringing dead people back to life, sometimes more often than once. I found this a rather fascinating film, although not always easy to follow. Charlie, what did you think of Mickey 17?
It was definitely a movie that took me a while to be able to follow.
Yet, what's this about? What are they actually doing up there in space on this other planet?
but in the long run, I did enjoy it. It's an amazing movie, you know, just the way it's shot, the acting on it, even the way that the story unfolds. It's a really good movie to go and watch.
particularly because, I mean, it's not what I would normally consider a science fiction film. They're not usually like this, because this is sort of goes off into the sort of a unbelievable fantasy world with all sorts of crazy things happen. I mean, this is it. You think, it's okay, they're going off to this distant planet on some other sun, and they're going to want to settle in there. And but then it turns out to be about totally different. It's about the issue about this one man who agreed to come along on this journey to this other planet. But he had signed some papers agreeing that they would kill him.
He was signing up as an expendable.
On the understanding that they could then bring him back to life.
Yes.
And, of course, then he went, forgot about all that sort of nonsense until it actually happened.
Yeah, well, actually, funny that you mention it, because I actually think that is what the movie really is about.
Like, yes.
You have this guy that has died a couple of times already. The story of the Mickey that we're following, as the title says, is Mickey 17.
Yeah, number 17.
Is the 17th of himself.
Yeah.
But he goes through the motions, just assuming that what the scientist told him was like black and white like that. Like, oh, yeah, you're going to die, but we're just going to print you out again. But then, and this is not giving anything away because this is part of the trailer, he one day manages to go back to his bed right after a big day at work, and he notices that they have printed him again because they thought that he was dead. When he encounters Mickey 18, that is, I think, the first time that he realizes that he is not actually continuing to live. Every time he is printed, it's a brand new person. And now he understands that for him, for that particular Mickey, when he dies, that is the end of his story. And the other one is the one that continues.
Yeah, and now this is the situation. The point is that they can should not that the people who organise all this have two of the same person around.
That's right.
Which means that one of them's going to go.
Yeah. They give us that premise in the universe of the story, right? In the loss of this movie, that nobody can have a double. Mm. Nobody can be duplicated.
So but he comes back virtually himself, even with a lot of his memories are come back.
All of the memories are implanted into the new print. But then that's the big question of, is this the same person or is this a new person with the same memories, which would be different. And this director is really good, Bong Joon-ho, who also directed Parasite a couple of years ago, and he won the Oscar for Best Picture. Absolutely amazing movie. And he's done really crazy sort of like sci-fi movies before as well. He did Snowpiercer with Chris Evans, and he did another one called OSHA with Netflix. And that one was also... Those two are also like very sci-fi, fantasy sort of movies.
I didn't know that. Oh, no, it's quite an amazing world that he takes us into.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely amazing.
This film.
Yes.
And I must just mention this because I've come across checking up on some of the background on this movie that quite a few other film critics have considered this film to be a satire on Donald Trump because, as far as they're concerned, the main villain in it who developed this killing people and then getting a new version of that dead person and all this sort of a thing, you know, that he actually is a sort of a copy of Donald Trump.
Yeah,
that
parody.
He looks like him. That
a parody
he
of him.
Sort of seems to have the same sort of humour and behaviour and way of talking and moving.
Yes.
Yeah, and all this sort of a thing. I must admit that I never even got that when I watched it, but you did.
Well, right from the get-go, when they present to you this company or whoever are taking these people to the new colony, and this person is presented as kind of like their leader, right?
Yes.
But he's also the person with the money, which is basically a very direct nod to oligarchy.
Yeah.
But yeah, just the way he's so disconnected with the things that actually happen to the other people, you know? Like when he get again, this is not a spoiler. This is just something funny that happens, but When they go out in a mission and another person dies, that he's yelling at him, saying, like, you were the one that was supposed to die. You're the one whose job is to die. Why did the other person die? And it's so disconnected from the actual reality of what's going on with his silly, out-of-place jokes and his demeanor. Yeah, I was like, if they didn't do it on purpose, Donald Trump has become that caricature.
Yeah.
Well, so big enough that people can just associate it very easily with that.
Yeah. And so the film could be taken as a satire of Donald Trump and what he's doing in America now. But then again, of course, the filmmakers have denied that there is any connection to Trump.
Yeah, I don't think the movie itself. I think more the character.
But still
the character
unusual.
Of Kenneth Marshall.
Yeah. And, you know, so you've got this guy in there, but... they even have one scene in the film where somebody has a go at shooting this villain bloke, the Donald Trump figure in it, and just sort of misses him and just sort of gets him on the cheek, on the side of the face, which is what happened to Donald Trump about a year ago.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's to me too much of a coincidence. However, the point is, this film was released before that happened to Donald Trump. Actually, happened to Donald Trump last year.
Was
so
filmed.
Supposed to, yeah, the film came out before then.
Was filmed before then.
It came out last week. So you know, but you just never know who's kidding who in this. But it's still a fascinating thing to keep an eye out for Donald Trump.
amazing acting skills from Mark Ruffalo playing that role, and Robert Pattinson is amazing. Steve Young, everybody in the movie. What's the name of her? Toni Collette as well is absolutely amazing. Yeah, really, really good movie to watch.
Oh, yes, good. Okay, odd science fiction, but still good, fascinating stuff. Thank you. That was Charlie Sierra with his views on Mickey 17. And I'm Hans Petrovic on Plains FM 96.9.
International fugitive. Money launderer. Criminal mastermind. John Francis Spiteri.
Who?
Lock him up.
This is Australia. It's still a free country, isn't it?
Why are you in this place?
Oh, mate, this is a tragic case of mistaken identity.
In Spit, a man who has been released from jail after 20 years returns to his Australian home, where he faces old enemies and a past that refuses to go away. Sue Freeman's been off to the Silky Otter Cinema at Wigram to see this delicate interplay among many questionable characters. Sue, this film is conflicted by the difference between legality and anarchy and clarity and chaos. What did you make of Spit?
Well, for the first half hour, I didn't know what to make of it. And I saw the singularly unattractive man trying to stick a pack of cigarettes down his back and slipped on brand new jandals, left the tag on.
Yeah, this is when
sprayed himself with.
When he's in that, he seems to be coming
going
back.
Customs, yeah. Mm. And he has no luggage with him, and he sort of saunters through, but then they recognise him, and the chase is on before he even leaves the airport. And the next thing, ends up in immigration. What was interesting, I thought, about the movie is it touched on the Australian immigration system and how they treat immigrants, which is quite appalling, and that came out. They didn't go into detail about it, but you certainly were made aware of it. And then there was the, what was the other thing with, there were a couple of serious issues that were dealt with there. Mm. Even, I mean, the whole corrupt justice system, they seemed to know that there was this corrupt detective.
Yeah.
And well, he was never held to account.
Yeah. I mean, I never thought about it really, but I never thought that Australia had an immigration detention centre.
Oh, yes.
This is where he got stuck.
Well, this is where, Hans, all the 501s that are sent from Australia back here, they've come from those immigration centres because they have all these immigrant ships, boats of all description, landing in Australia wanting asylum. And they stick them in Manus Island and various ones. They've got heaps of them. And he, as an Australian citizen, ends up in an Australian immigration centre.
Yeah, I couldn't quite figure that one out either.
Which is kind of bizarre. And then he ends up being the English language teacher. So they're all learning just abuse. There's not one sensible English word. And in fact, when these immigrants who are trying to make a good impression come out with this bad language, they think they're doing it to impress the immigration officials, and there's someone muttering saying, who's the English language teacher around here?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, this is quite fascinating what you say. And this fellow, David Wenham, played. And the odd thing is he's returned in this film after almost 20 years. In 2003, they made a sort of a earlier film about called Gettin' Square, in which David Wenham also plays this character, and that's the name of the film is the name of this character. His name is Spit, would you believe, which is short for
Spiteri.
Spiteri, which I don't know what you tell me. This is an Italian name. I don't know what that's got to do with it either.
I don't know, Italian immigrants way back, but he's blonde and kind of scruffy. And,
I can't say that I can remember this film of 20 years ago, but
no, I gather either.
It was, particularly in Australia, it was an extremely popular film, possibly because it was critical of the whole system there.
But it's also a bit of a comedy.
Oh, yes.
Because it's a comedy of errors.
Certainly is.
It's a comedy of errors. Everything he does is wrong.
Yeah.
But he's also sort of clever. You know, what a lot of these...
Yeah, he has that sort of way about him that he can win people over for himself, except he's got just as many more enemies who are out there just to get him now that he's back in the country. Mm. Most of them thought he was dead, not knowing he'd been away in jail overseas. But now that he's back, they want to get him because they're afraid that he may one day tell the police or somebody what these other fellows had done. When he knew them, that's the whole point why they're down on him, so trying to get him. They're afraid for themselves what he might say.
But it's not clear in the movie that he's been 20 years in a British or overseas. Because that when they question him, they say, we understand you were selling cards on the street in the UK.
Mm, yeah.
And he said, yes, Minnie Mouse and Mickey Mouse. I wonder if that's true. I mean, everything he says, you have to question, is that true?
Yeah, I should, yes.
Yeah. Because it's entertaining because you get caught up and you think, gee, these immigration authorities, they're awful the way they treat these immigrants. And then you see the corrupt detective, goodness me. And it's sort of exposing the underbelly of Australia, but at the same time, doing a sort of comedy.
Yeah. Oh, well, I guess that is the best way to, if you're going to make a film critical of a country's system, government system and all this sort of a thing, put it in as a light comedy. You can get away with a heck of a lot more and say a hell of a lot more in that way and get away with it.
Yeah. It's a real comedy of errors, but he shows his human side when his sister reaches out to him.
Yeah, that's right.
You remember that?
Mm.
Yeah. He does show that he really cares about her. I mean, they were separated as foster children and put into separate foster homes. And he hadn't seen her for all those years. That was kind of touching. But, of course, you know, ends up with this little boy and he doesn't know how to deal with him at all.
Mm.
He's got no skills, no marketable skills.
No sense of what to do or not to do.
He's a completely hapless individual. But funny.
Yeah, funny, but yeah. Well, I mean, this is it. There is lots of fun to be had from this, his unexpected return to a world, to Australia's, all these weird things are happening, you know. And
He's come back to a country where there are these big immigration centres where all these immigrants are coming in. It's a chaotic world.
Oh, yes.
Quite different.
I know.
He would have left 20 years before.
Oh, no. Yeah. But I did like this guy, David Wenham. And I did find the film very good going, too.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. That was Sue Freeman with her views on Spit, and I would like to thank the sponsor of this Movie Talk program. They are the Harcourt's Grenadier Accommodation Centre, which is located at 98 Moorhouse Avenue. If you're looking for a place to live, check out the Harcourt's Accommodation Centre website. That's assetmanagers.co.nz. That address again, assetmanagers, one word, .co.nz. In the Chinese film Black Dog, a man who has just been released from jail returns to his home near the Gobi Desert, where he joins a group who are clearing the town of stray dogs before the beginning of the Olympic Games of 2008. Robin Munro's been off to the Lumiere to see this unusual film. Robin, this film won the Uncertain Regard Award at the Cannes Film Festival. What did you think of Black Dog?
Oh, it's a peculiar film. It's a bit like a Western. I think perhaps I can't think of any particular film, but perhaps...
Well, it's set in Western China, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes. And it's a bit like Clint Eastwood when he didn't say very much. Often what he said sort of rattled. But this guy, even when he does speak, says very little. And I think he's sort of supposed to be this lone hero in this bleak landscape. But he forms a relationship with this dog.
Well, it gets one friendship there,
yes,
at least.
Yeah. But others he's a bit wary of. He perhaps says 20 words in the whole film.
That's amazing.
And
yeah.
At the end, we see him riding along the road on his motorbike, I don't think it's to give anything, with a puppy. And he's probably going to form a relationship with this new dog too. But Pink Floyd is playing, which I didn't know was very popular in China. And on his motorbike, he has Pink Floyd written on it too. And it's a sort of kind of eerie music that suits these wide open spaces. And the town that he's returned to is sort of crumbling. It's just before the 2008 Beijing Olympics. And they're actually going to knock down some of the houses.
They want to do it up a bit before the Olympics.
But a lot of people have left, and that's the reasons for all the dogs.
Yes, that's left all these dogs without anybody to, so many stray dogs.
Yeah.
And their next job is to collect them up and take them out. And seem, I don't know, they seem to dump them in the Gobi Desert or something.
Yes, well, there's rumours that they eat them or they sell them or they sell them back to their owners. And they're also trying to register the dogs. And we see a moment that's a bit revealing about him when a poor girl finds that her cute little dog is being taken away by the dog catchers. And she appeals and her grandmother appeals, but the other people aren't moving. But our hero, he moves. And there is one dog, the black dog, which may have rabies, and there's a special reward for it because they're worried that if it goes around biting people, that people will die of rabies too. And he sort of ends up by accident with this dog, and because he might have rabies, he's forced to spend a week with it in isolation.
Yes.
And perhaps that's where they start to get along a bit better.
Yeah, they become quite, as I've said, they become good friends.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, and it's quite, so there's, and they've got all these, it starts up in a scene, an outer scene, a sort of.
Outside
Gobi
the town.
Scene,
yeah.
On a hillside. And there's a cut. One bus or something driving along there, or one big truck or something, and this huge.
The scene is filled with loose dogs.
Loose dogs.
Yeah,
and you know it's amazing how they did that. Where would you find that many dogs to do things like that?
I don't know. They do look domesticated, most of them. Although we see a wolf occasionally, and certainly a tiger, which are quite dangerous.
Yeah.
But the dogs themselves don't seem very threatening. But perhaps in big numbers, they could indeed cause a bus to swerve or something and tip over, and that is the first. Almost the first thing that we see. We see this horde of dogs covering the hill and then this bus making its way along, and about the time it reaches the edge of the dogs, it tips over.
Yep. Yes. Yeah, I wondered about that. Oh, no. It's, then he goes off. His father is there and he's sick and in hospital, and he seems to be then connected to the local...
police in some ways, and he is connected. He's been feeding the animals
in the
zoo.
He's asking his son to look after some of the animals there. And that's how you get the tiger getting out and wandering around town as well as the dogs, all this sort of thing going on. And it's such an odd, eccentric film. I've never seen anything like this out of China before.
No.
But I enjoyed it for that, and this town, you know, needs a lot of fixing up. And at the end, you see them knocking down these huge
blocks,
buildings, and all this sort of thing. And there's many aspects to this film, but essentially, it's about, I guess, difficult living in China.
And a kind of friendship. It's a buddy movie of sorts between him and the dog.
Yes.
And even though they can't speak to each other, and there's a little bit of a flirt at one point, but he doesn't give her many words.
That's true.
You know, he is quite a likable character. I mean, the family who lost the
member who died and which he went to jail is still out to get him and so on. But the police and some other people want to give him a chance. It, as you say, it's a peculiar Chinese movie. Some people have suggested it's a bit about social criticism, but I think it's mainly looking at an unusual character who wants to stick to himself and doesn't really want to bother others.
Yes, yes, yes. But I would find it very difficult. I mean, you could just out of jail. It's always, of course, difficult to yes. settle back into a community. And I've already said this, but I did find that this film is full of striking photography. And both outside and inside the town, and particularly in the nearby Gobi Desert. It's just...
stunning.
It's good to look at all the way. And then so far, I've never seen so many dogs in a movie. Oh, yeah, it's well worth a look in a light sort of way.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, good. That was Robin Munro with his views on Black Dog. And I'm Hans Petrovic, inviting you to listen to Movie Talk again on Plains FM 96.9 at midday next Wednesday. This week's programme will also be repeated at 11:30 a.m. this Saturday. And you can listen to podcasts of earlier episodes on the Plains FM website. That's on plainsfm.org.nz.